Then, reading from the envelope, she recited the list of his demands.
"Does he really have a bomb?" Scotty asked.
"Yes," she replied. "I saw it. It looked real."
"Oh, boy."
Scotty called Northwest Orient Flight Operations in Minnesota. His words were summarized in a teletype. "Passenger has advised this is a hijacking. En route to Seattle. The Stew has been handed a note. He requests $200,000 in a knapsack by 5 o'clock p.m. He wants 2 back parachutes, 2 front parachutes. He wants the money in negotiable American currency. Denomination of the bills is not important. Has a bomb in briefcase and will use it if anything is done to block his request." The hijacker also requested that a fuel truck be waiting on the tarmac at SeaTac Airport to refuel the plane for a new journey to be specified later. And he demanded that a flight engineer board the plane for the next leg of the journey. He didn't say why. 2. In the cockpit of Flight 305, Scotty and co-pilot Bill Ratichak discussed how to handle the situation. So far, the passengers had no idea the plane was being hijacked, and Scotty wanted to keep it that way. After the call to Minnesota, Northwest Orient Flight Operations had contacted Don Nyrop, the airline's president, as well as the FBI. The FBI wanted to storm the plane, but Nyrop said he preferred to cooperate with the hijacker, that the airline had insurance and would pay the ransom. The FBI reluctantly agreed, but it would take time for the hijacker's demands to be met. In the meantime, the 727 had reached Tacoma and begun to circle. The FBI and the airline scrambled to pull together the ransom and parachutes. Scotty got on the intercom and told the passengers that the plane was experiencing a minor mechanical problem. There was no need for concern, and that they would be landing in an hour or so. Meanwhile, in the back of the plane, the hijacker, Dan Cooper, had been chain-smoking. He offered a cigarette to Schaffner, who took it to calm her nerves, even though she had given up smoking some time before. Outside, a storm was developing. Soon it began to rain. The airline contacted the Seattle National Bank, where it had done business. The bank was glad to help. It had, in fact, a store of money ready for just such a purpose. A cache of $20 bills that had been microfilmed and each serial number recorded in case of a heist or robbery. 10,000 $20 bills banded in bricks of 50 were stuffed into a satchel with a drawstring and delivered to the FBI. It weighed about 20 pounds. The parachutes were obtained from a jump center east of the airport, 2 front or reserve chutes, and 2 rear or main parachutes. As Cooper had insisted, they were civilian parachutes, not military. They, too, were given to the FBI. Meanwhile, the plane continued to circle SeaTac. Tina, the other stewardess, moved up and down the aisle, reassuring passengers. Dan Cooper explained to Schaffner how things were going to work.
"After the plane lands," he said, "I want you to go out and get the money and bring it back."
"What if it's too heavy?"
"It won't be. You'll manage."
"Then," he continued, "you'll get the parachutes and bring them on board."
He pulled a bottle of Benzedrine pills from his pocket. "Take these to the cockpit in case the crew gets sleepy during the next flight." She asked if he was hijacking the plane to Cuba, at the time the most common destination for skyjackings.
"No," he said, "not Cuba. Someplace you'll like."
She asked him why he was hijacking the plane. Did he bear a grudge against Northwest?
"I don't have a grudge against your airline, miss," he said. "I just have a grudge."
On the ground, the airport had been closed and all outgoing flights canceled. Incoming flights were either diverted or put into a holding pattern. Shortly after 5, ground control radioed the plane and said the money and parachutes had been assembled and were in a car at the far end of a runway, as instructed. The pilots brought the 727 into land and taxied, as per the hijacker's instructions, to a remote section of runway. It was now dark and the rain persisted, accompanied by occasional flashes of lightning. The area had been illuminated with banks of floodlights. The plane came to a halt.
"Go get the money," Cooper told Schaffner.
Schaffner walked down the aisle to the exit door and descended the stairs, walking in wobbly high heels to the waiting vehicle. An FBI agent took the money from the trunk and handed it to her. Schaffner walked back to the plane, mounted the stairs, and carried the sack back to Cooper. He opened it, looked inside, grabbed a few bricks, and took them out.
"For you," he said.
Schaffner was surprised.
"Sorry, sir. No tips. Northwest Orient policy."
He seemed to smile.